Your SteveJonesShow.com audio is coming up next. Audio and podcast of The Steve Jones Show, a service of Sunbury Motors, North 4th Street, Sunbury, and Sunbury Motors Kia, routes 11 and 15, Hummel's Wharf.
Sports talk where your voice counts. This is The Steve Jones Show on News Radio 1070 WKOK. Now, from the Sunbury Motors Studio, here's Steve Jones.
Welcome. Great to have you with us. Great to talk with Joe Susan. Appreciate the time he gave us today. Also, the great job Kevin setting it up.
He'll be on the field with Marist on September 7th. So he's got some game preparations to start getting into here in the next week or so.
Well, that's why he's at an interesting part. He is not up to the taper part yet. He's at the midway point where they're going to start considering tapering to get ready because he's not into the third week. He still has two more weeks before his first game. So he's at a little different stage than maybe some others. Take, for example, North Carolina, South Carolina. They open a week from tonight. They're in the game week preparation now. So it's a little bit different for some of them.
And that's odd that then Bucknell has a bye the second week. I mean, you know.
Yeah, it's a tough spot.
You got to talk to that scheduler for the Patriot League. You put one in the middle of the season or toward the end, don't you, Steve?
Yeah, you'd like to. Now, sometimes with a conference schedule, it rotates through as to what week you get your bye. So, you know, they have a bye week one, then another team has a bye in week two, another team has a bye in week three. So you try to rotate it through as to and it turns out by the luck of the draw. I remember one year in basketball, you had two bye weeks built in. Penn State's first bye week was the opening game, and their last bye week was the last game. They played 18 consecutive games in between. I thought, what genius did this?
Actually, I think last year Bucknell's only week off was the first week of the season. I think they ran straight through.
Ooh.
Right.
That's just tough on the kids.
Penn State gets two bye weeks right at the end of the non-conference season at September 28th, and then after the Michigan. They'll play Indiana, Michigan, then they get another bye week before they go to Ohio State.
Well, I think technically, to correct what I said earlier, that technically their bye week was like the last week, was that last weekend in November. But this year the bye comes early as well as in the first week.
Right. No. Yeah. And so that's what it does.
Steve, one of the things that Joe Susan said, and I wanted to get your thought on this, he talked about the captains of the team and providing the leadership and a little bit of the discipline, and having great leaders really helps him as a coach. Now, Bill O'Brien, I think, does it slightly different in terms of captains. And he has game captains, as I understand it, versus a team captain for the season. What role do you think that, how important is that, whether the team elects them, the coaches appoint them, they're done on a game-by-game basis?
Depends on who you have at that particular moment. If you have, for example, you look around your locker room, you may have 8 to 10 guys that you just know in a particular group are strong leaders, okay? Then you do go with game captains. You rotate it around because you have that many individuals to begin with. If you only have two or three guys that you just know have that leadership ability, and you have other players who may be really good but they're followers, then you go with three or four captains. So I think it depends on your personnel group at the time as to how you go about it. I don't think there's one exact formula when it comes to that.
You know, I also found it interesting. He mentioned one of the captains, Jeff Goyette, who's a linebacker, but he's also a little more known for being a long snapper. And there's one of your captains. I mean, when was the last time you saw a guy who was the long snapper be the captain of a team? That tells you the type of player that Jeff is. And I'll tell you what, I've seen that young man make it down from snapping the ball to making the tackle with a 5-yard gain by the returner.
Leadership comes in all forms, and if that's what you, if he happens to be one of the guys, you have to have somebody that people respect and naturally gravitate toward. You have to have that. You know, they have some charismatic qualities. Well, you can have charismatic qualities as an offensive tackle, a quarterback, or a long snapper. It, you know, it doesn't really matter. As long as you have those charismatic qualities where, and not only that, but you also have to be somebody that's really good at what you do. Okay? You just can't be, you know, or else you're an all-out effort guy, and it makes a big difference when you're an all-out effort guy, that you can lead by that kind of example. That's, you know, those are important factors. And it's up to the coach to recognize exactly the kind of leader that they want to have.
And isn't it true that there sometimes the real team leaders in the locker room and on the field are really not as well known, say, by the fans or the media, but inside the locker room, it's the one or two guys, when they speak up, the whole team just listens and hangs on every word because they're recognized within the team as being the leaders, but they may not be that household name that the fans might know.
Right, and it, you know, again, it just depends on the personality that you have and how others react to your personality. I mean, that's a big part of picking out who a leader happens to be. And so it's, sometimes it's somebody you know, and it's obvious. Sometimes it's not. Sometimes they grow into being it. John Urschel is somebody, for example, that's grown into being a leader. He's far more vocal now than he was at any point in his lifetime here. And that's, you know, it's a credit to him. Kurt Warner barely spoke more than 15, 20 words when he was a sophomore. By the time he got to be a senior, you know, now he's, you know, in paragraphs, he's leading, he's running, he's, you know, he's taking people through walls and things like that. So it all depends on who it is. One of the original things that we talked about, and I'd like to get comments from people at 800-795-9565. That's 800-795-9565. How do you feel about nationally televised high school games? Now, the local level, look, you need to have local radio. You need to. I think it's really important for the connection with the community. You need, having local access cable TV is great, without question. I don't mind PCM when they do their game of the week. I think it's fun just doing a game of the week. You know, but when it gets to the national ones, their approach is different than the local. When Kevin does a game, he does the game. He talks about the individuals and how well they're playing, what they're doing right, where they might get better as a team, gives you the flow of the game. Same thing with the local cable guys. They talk about the game and so forth. PCN guys, they talk about the game. On the national level, they're talking so much about the recruitability and who's after said player. I'm not sure they're doing the game. And I get concerned at that. I don't know about you guys, but that's how I feel about it. I don't like games on national TV. And this is the second time in about a month I've Christine Brennan and I have agreed on this.
Oh boy, I think that's a sign of the end times, Bob.
It is. Oh, yeah. The apocalypse is 14 weeks away. Then, according to some obscure passage somewhere, if that happens.
No. I think you're right. I think, you know, I think now that's the first sign of Armageddon.
Well, you know, the only time I think I've ever mentioned where someone, you know, I mentioned a college for a high school football player is when he's already made the decision.
Yeah, but that's fine when you do that, Kevin. Yeah. There's nothing wrong with that. That's just part of.
But that's about the player, though. I mean, I'm talking about the player to people that know him, to, you know, to people that know his family, his grandparents. That's the reason I mention it. But I usually only mention it even when it's already decided.
Right. That's fine. I mean, there's nothing wrong with that.
But that's the other thing. You know, when I do a game, no matter whether it's on cable or on the radio, I'm doing the game for, you know, people in this area, and their focus is the player, the team, and the relationships on the team, and, you know,
the outcome of the game.
Yeah, the fact that he loves watching Survivor when he's not practicing, right. Those sort of things.
Yeah, that's different, but it's when it's the entire focus. Sometimes it's on, like, I don't know, depends on, like, two or three players, okay? And it's about where they're picking and this. I'm sorry, that to me is not high school sports. To me, high school sports is something that is an extension of the school. It's something that on a Friday night the community comes together and watches the game. The parents of the band, the parents of the cheerleaders, the parents of the players, the community comes out because that is the name of the town that of the team, Danville, you know, Sealands Grove, Milton, so forth. To me, I mean, it's a community coming together, and if it turns out that there's next level potential for some of these players, believe me, the college coaches will find them. You're not finding anybody on a Friday night on ESPN or Fox Sports 1. You're not discovering players, right? The players have already been discovered by the high school coaches. They've already been by the college coaches. They're already being recruited heavily and have been for a year in some cases, maybe 2 years. So that's, you know, showcasing them. When they use the word marketability today in the story, that turned me off completely.
You know, it reminds me of the criticism of the O.J. Simpson trial. You know, there's been a lot of discussion over the years about whether criminal trials should have been televised. And it was clear that the famous or infamous Judge Ito was playing for a national audience as he was sitting on the bench, and so would Johnny Cochran and the defense lawyers and the prosecutors. And I think it, in one sense, it can change the outcome because it changes the presentation because of cameras. And I think at a high school level, somebody being on national television will cause coaches and players to react in a different way that will affect the outcome of a game, as opposed to not being on this national stage. And that's just not right. I think, you know, you play the game and the media is irrelevant, but not if you bring it down to the high school level. I think it's going to affect the outcome and who gets the ball, who gets showcased, what the strategy is. The coach doesn't want to gamble maybe because he's on national TV. And so the outcome is affected, and that just strikes me as not being a good thing.
I don't find it interesting. And that's the key part. Now, obviously, there are people who love and follow recruiting, and there are a lot of Penn State. And I'll tell you, one of the great bailouts for me is that when fans ask me about recruiting, is that I can honestly tell them straightforwardly that under NCAA rules, I can't, because Jack and I do fall under NCAA guidelines. So if we do, it's a violation.
It's not a cop-out. Well, it's a violation, right?
Right. It's a violation. But it's also a big plus for me because, honestly, I don't have time to follow it. And people who follow it closely, whether it's on Blue White Illustrated or Fight on State or whatever form it has to be, and when they get to, you know, and post on message boards, they're far more knowledgeable about it than I am. Far more knowledgeable.
I mean, isn't it Mel? Go ahead, Steve. Sorry.
No, that's all I was saying. Okay. They're far more knowledgeable about it than I am.
I mean, there's a guy like, is it Mel Kiper Jr., who came from nowhere, who has a cottage industry just about recruiting and has gained, you know, notoriety and a spot on ESPN just because he was an intensely detailed person who followed the recruiting of high school athletes. He's made a business out of it for that kind of rather esoteric thing. It's he's one of many.
Well, no, whether it's Tom Lemming or Phil Gross or a number of others who are involved in recruiting. I mean, look, I give any entrepreneur credit for finding a niche and making something happen for them business-wise in their career. That's fine. I have no problem with that at all because there is tremendous interest in recruiting. And the fact that these guys have gone out and as entrepreneurs found a service and a way to get the information out, I have no problem with that whatsoever. Never have.
No, I think that's a fair thing. I mean, they're just taking an opportunity and turning it into a business advantage.
Right, exactly. It's smart on their part, and there are people who are interested in it. And as I said, there are just many more fans, for example, that know far more about it than I do. They really do. I freely admit that.
Well, you've got to focus on the here and now. I mean,
right, exactly. And that's my primary job is focusing on who's actually here and who they're actually playing against. And it's not on who might be here a year from now.
And you could drive yourself silly if you started playing that what-if game. Holy cow.
Oh, sure you could. You know, but I think it's fun for the fans. I understand the star system because I think people want to know and find out exactly where they're, you know, where this player is, that player is. Is it 2, 3, 4? I understand the star system part of it. I also know that once they get to the practice field, they start from zero.
That's exactly right.
Well, no, I mean, so I'm talking about from my point of view. Yeah. It starts at zero for these guys. It doesn't matter how many stars. Now you have to prove it against comparable talent, and it may prove out that whatever your star happened to be, 4, 5, 3, proves out exactly right. Sometimes it's inexact. But when I see the games on national TV, not local, not radio, but on national TV, and the focus is on a couple of guys, you know, because they're the high profile guys. These, you know, they don't pick. Now, F1 and ESPN are not going to pick Selins Grove against Danville.
They should, but I know they won't. They should.
Right, but they're not going to. They're going to pick Modern Day against. You know, they're going to pick one of the high profile teams that have high profile recruits.
Yeah. Exactly. Southlake, Texas is one of the great high schools in Texas. They're going to go after that school. Again, Mater Dei out of California. There's a couple of places, Belgrade, Florida, some of the other suburban Miami schools. Yeah, they're on the hot list.
But one thing that you mentioned, Steve, that I think we need to go back to is you were comparing the high school football games to the Little League World Series. It all goes back to what's your intent on the broadcast. Right. Is your intent on the broadcast to highlight youth sports, or is your intent on the broadcast to highlight a few players and have ISOs on those players because they're the ones that are going to be the big names in the next month or so during recruiting time? That's what you have to look at. You know, that's why when you talk about ESPN and the shift that they make in Little League World Series baseball, that's about the players, that's about the parents, that's about the coaches.
Beautiful job with it.
It's a different approach.
You know,
I think they do a beautiful job with it, and I think when they do high school, I think they're trying to set up their college coverage for the next couple of years.
Sure, they forget.
And
what's
I think
going
that's
on.
What it's. I think that's what it's about is setting up their college coverage for the next couple of years, so that when you see, oh, let's take Christian Hackenberg. Okay, obviously a high profile example, and I don't even know if he was on TV last year. So I don't know that. I guess he was on in an All Star game, right?
But yes, that's right. I didn't see it, but I know he was.
All right, I don't know if he was on in a regular season game or not. But let's take him as an example. I think the idea that they have is showcasing a game for him at like a place like Fork Union is that so you know exactly who he is when he goes out there and starts playing ball for Penn State. You know, that's as an example. I think that's what they're trying to do is they're trying to set up their star chain down the road. When they do the Little League World Series, they're just doing it for the beauty of the Little League World Series, and I think they do an incredible job.
You know, when Wide World of Sports first broadcast the Little League World Series.
Spanning the globe.
It was 5 p.m. on Saturday nights.
Yes, it was.
And I would watch it. Turns out one of my close friends from college left after graduation and went to work for them. The original rights fees for Rune Arledge and company at ABC Sports to broadcast the League World Series was $25,000.
Right.
That was it. And that's what they paid Little League Baseball to do it. And they, you know, arrived from wherever with all their cameras and equipment in South Williamsport. They were there on Friday. The talent came in on Saturday, the game, or Friday night, the game, and it was over. And now it's a 2-week production. And it is done well, and it's to focus literally the wide world of what baseball is becoming.
But the other side of that is it brought a new audience to Little League Baseball that Little League Baseball didn't have. So that is the one benefit that they did get out of it.
Oh, huge!
I mean, the numbers of these games have just been incredible.
I think Little League Baseball has benefited exponentially out of the coverage. I think ESPN and their presentation. That benefited exponentially, not financially. I mean, I'm sure they're doing fine financially, but their coverage of it is exactly, to me, the right tone. I don't think that their tone on any Friday night broadcast of high school football is the right tone. I think it's all about establishing stars you're going to see, and it actually benefits ESPN more than it does the individual. Because, I mean, these players are already being – that player over there, okay, we're focusing on this quarterback. Well, he's being recruited by Texas A&M, Alabama, Ohio State, Penn State, and Nebraska.
And okay? The Winnipeg Blue Bombers as well.
Yeah, but right. What about the right guard that isn't going anywhere that's playing his last game on senior night?
Right, but never gets mentioned on the broadcast
exactly.
Anyway. All right. Now, I mean, obviously they're all thrilled to be on. I mean, that's important. They are all thrilled to be on. But the focus of the broadcast is on individuals. And to me, high school's not – it's not the right moment. It's not the right time, not the right tone. But that, you know, locally, yeah. I mean, local radio, local access cable, PCN, yeah, because they're doing the game.
Yeah. It's the game is driving the coverage, not the other way around.
Right, exactly. Let's take a break here on News Radio 1070 WKOK.
Ready for a quality pre-owned vehicle? Well, get them before they go to auction at Sunbury Motors. Go to sunburymotors.com and click on pre-auction blowout.
Like a 2006 Ford Explorer, 4-liter XLT, new rotors and brake lining, just $10,995. 2011 Ford Fiesta, 4-door sedan, $12,494. 2009 Honda Accord, 4-door LX, just $13,998. 2006 Pontiac Solstice, 2-door convertible, super low miles, only $15,520. 2011 Hyundai Sonata, 2.4-liter hybrid for just $17,887. And a 2010 Honda Odyssey, 5-door EXL, $22,775. Call 888-536-8017.
All come with a Carfax report and our lowest price promise. Pre-auction blowout. 24-7 at sunburymotors.com. At the North 4th Street Auto Plaza, Sunbury, and at our dealership, routes 11 and 15 in Hummel's Wharf. Sunbury Motors, a tradition of trust since 1915.
Taking your calls at 800-795-9565. This is the Steve Jones Show on News Radio 1070 WKOK. Now from the Sunbury Motors Studio, here's Steve Jones.
Great to have you with us here on this Thursday. Tonight on the initial Penn State football show of the season, I will have a brief interview with Bill O'Brien, also Jack Ham, Lauren Crispo, Roger Corey on the show tonight. The next week, Bill O'Brien will be on the show. 800-795-9565. That's 90 minutes from now.
All Steve Jones Thursday.
Kevin, Bob Buhner is with me that high school games on the national level are not a great idea. Kevin thinks it's great if his kid is showcased. It's really kind
and
of
we
a
know
sad,
that's not going to happen.
Kind of a sad personal commentary.
Hey, what is a sound that you'll never hear at a Major League Baseball game?
The sound I'll never hear? Well, at the Phillies game. Phillies win. Phillies win.
That's not true.
How about gentlemen start your engines?
That's also a baseball sound.
Oh, that's right. A baseball sound you want to hear. Yeah. Okay.
It's this one. All right, that's the sound you'll never hear at a Major League game, right?
Ah.
This is my favorite game. By the way, California in the final, and I believe I had them in the Final Four, didn't I, Steve? Yes, I did. Thank you for noticing.
I believe you did.
This one is struck deep to center field. It's gone! A three-run for Grant Holman, home run. And California leads it 6-3 in the ninth inning.
Did you hear the key in the last part of that? In the ninth inning.
Yeah, they were playing late last night, no question.
Yeah, they were playing Westport, Connecticut, and it was a 3-3 game at the end of six and stayed that way until he hit the home run last night.
And, Steve, were you cheering for the Connecticut team?
Honestly, I had a game. I've had games every night since August 12th. So I have not watched anything on TV. In fact, everything I've done has been listening on radio. And I'll be frank with you. What has been great is that I've always had the Sirius Premier package in my car.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
They now have Major League Baseball. So I'm listening to MLB games as I drive across the countryside. I mean, take for example, I'll give you the example Monday. I teach class at 9:05, but it's just handing out the syllabus. And then I'm getting out at 9:30, and I'm driving to Pittsburgh. And Jack and I are going to be speaking to the Duquesne Club in Pittsburgh. Now, there is no greater thrill than standing up, looking around the table at CEOs, bank presidents, vice presidents, doctors, and realizing that you are the single poorest person in the room.
Yes.
There's no greater thrill in your lifetime than that. Then you ask yourself, but these people all came to hear what you had to say. Say to yourself, now you know you're in the Jerry Seinfeld bizarro world. I'm supposed to go there and ask them what they do to be successful.
Yeah. See, the beautiful part is now, Steve, you've become the center of the focus of the entire room.
Well, I'm with Jack, so yeah. I think Jack's more so than I am.
And immediately thereafter, Steve retired to the kitchen to wash dishes at the Duquesne Club.
Yes, because I had to pay for my meal somehow. So I have to do that. So I drive to Pittsburgh. I'll do that. I come back in time to do the show here. Then when the show's over, I then drive to Williamsport Monday night to do a game.
Oh.
So I go to Pittsburgh and back, Williamsport and back on the same day. So that's Monday. Then Tuesday, I've got a game at Williamsport. Then Wednesday, they're home. Then Tuesday or Thursday next week, I have the Penn State football show after this is done with Bill, and then a doubleheader to do at the ballpark.
Oh, boy.
And then from there, then Friday, I will do the game at the ballpark here, and then I'll drive to New Jersey and probably get there about 2 in the morning. And then after that, I guess I have a Harrisburg thing I have to do on September 3rd.
Somewhere around there, you're going to grab some nutrition and sleep.
Yeah.
Besides the hot dog at the ballpark.
Well, it was originally scheduled for the Harrisburg thing for September 4th, which I was fine. I said, sure, I'll do it. Yeah, fine. Okay. And then I got a call saying, we need to move it to September 3rd. I said, okay, I'll go to September 3rd. It's a Tuesday. It's fine. Right? Well, I finally found out why. Evidently on the 4th, it's Rosh Hashanah. And so they're like, well, we're going to have like 20 to 25 people that couldn't go. I said, okay, fine. Whatever day is fine. I'll accommodate it, whatever. But that's the last one I do. In fact, I don't go on the road again until I fly to Bloomington on October 4th.
You were talking about you and Jack, our comments from the photo that is now on the Steve Jones Show Facebook page and at stevejonesshow.com. One of the captions had to do with, wow, that's a really nice shirt. Did you get it from that store over there?
as Steve is pointing in yonder direction,
right.
I think I said flowered shirt.
With flowered shirt, that's what it was.
The question is, does Jack Ham wear those shirts to the stadium when you guys are on the road?
Sometimes. Sometimes. I mean, he showed up in that at practice last week, and I mean, I didn't even think about it because
I've just seen him wear that
stuff before. So,
but on the Facebook
I'll
page,
right now,
funny.
Yeah. Well, I'm sure I haven't seen the picture. Kevin's like sitting there, typical, right? I haven't seen it, but I can just get. I mean, he wore a yellow shirt that was last week to practice. I think it was Thursday, Friday, something like that. So. So I'm going to guess that's it.
Well, it was, and I was tempted to put the other caption, and I congratulate you on getting 3 more years with Jack.
Thank you.
I think that's
thank
just
you.
Great. I'm one of those thank guys you. That takes my headphones into the stadium so I can listen to you and Jack do the commentary.
It's only because I let you on the show and you feel obligated.
Hey, I do. I got it. Steve makes me do this. I can't help it. I was thinking some clever wag could put a caption there. Oh, they got the contract for 3 years because Kevin and Bob were unavailable. But that was just wishful thinking.
Well, may have been.
Yeah.
I know. Although Kevin's made it plain he's very available. I don't know what they know. So.
Well, he's worried at the third year of the contract period, he wanted to stay at Danville on Friday nights to watch his son play football. So that ruled him out.
I see.
What are we talking about? What did I do this time?
Nothing important.
Oh, okay, good.
It's all good. Everything's fine. Don't worry about it. Just hit the buttons.
Yeah. Here's Steve, question for you. First game, 3:30. Over in New Jersey, you guys come on the air at 2 o'clock. What time do you get to the stadium? Because I was thinking you should drive right from State College right to the stadium.
I don't know, like quarter or two. No. 2 o'clock, my guess is I'll probably be inside the stadium between 12:30 and 1.
And
when it's a home game, I'm usually there 45 minutes before airtime. I don't like getting there. I mean, when Penn State's at home at Beaver Stadium, There is a back way that I take that gets me close, okay, that has literally no traffic until the absolute end. So there's a back way I take. That's just part of the glory of living in a place that you know a couple back roads that make it happen. So I can time it out pretty well where I can walk into the booth about 45 minutes before airtime, tape what I need to tape, because there is actually one more thing I have to tape before we then go over to the tailgate show. On the road, I always go with the team, Bob.
Okay.
I always go with the team, except in this case. This will be one of the few times Bill leaves. I couldn't go with the team when Joe was the coach because Joe wanted to arrive about an hour and a half, maybe an hour and 40 minutes before kickoff. Well, we're on the air 90 minutes before, so it cut it too close. So I couldn't do that. So I'd always have to find a ride from one of the writers to get in. Okay.
Mm-hmm.
Now, Bill likes to get there 2.5 hours before kickoff, which is perfect, which means I walk into the booth 45 minutes before airtime, which is about the time I like to walk in. I don't like being there too early because I think you can sit there and you can sit there so long that after a while you just get lethargic and complacent. And that's never been good for me. It's always been good to get in there, get something done, walk down, do your deal, get back up at the booth, and just make it, you know, continuous motion. I think if you're there so early, I mean, if I get there when Roger Corey gets there, which I think is like 3 a.m, you know, at that point you're like, you start the game like, oh, I've been here so long, and I still, for whatever reason, don't feel as sharp. It's just all in your routine.
Now, and I noticed that Bill O'Brien, you know, really did change the pregame focus. You know, much earlier arrival at the stadium, for example. Is that because of his NFL background as opposed to college?
Yes, it is.
Because
it's very much of a, in the NFL, they have a regiment, the same kind of regiment that you'd see the Patriots go through or any other NFL team. You know, it's what you're used to doing. It's
sure.
How he's used to doing things, and that's fine. They, you know, part of it is where you get taped. The players would get taped at the hotel, and then they would go over. Okay.
Mm-hmm.
The players actually get taped now at the stadium, ankles and so forth.
Sure.
That's where it's being done. That's why you go over at a particular time or not a particular time.
Makes good sense.
Speaking of the NFL, I have something that I wanted to get your thoughts on, Steve. It was a comment on ESPN by Ron Jaworski. And it caught me by surprise, and I want to see what you think. Here we go.
Colin Kaepernick could be one of the greatest quarterbacks ever. I love his skill set. He throws with accuracy. And in today's NFL, you have to have mobility. He's got all those attributes. And here's what I love. He gets coached hard.
Okay, what's wrong with that?
I just thought it's awful high praise for a guy who didn't play a whole season yet.
Right,
I mean, as a starting quarterback, I should say.
I mean, when you look at his skill set, I mean, who else really runs the way he runs? RG3, maybe
yes.
Cam Newton. Okay, but the difference between, RG3 is, I think, as accurate a thrower as Colin Kaepernick. There's no doubt that Kaepernick and RG3 are far more accurate throwers than Cam Newton. You then add in the size of Kaepernick versus the size of RG3. I mean, RG3 in some parts of his body is slight, okay, as opposed to Kaepernick, who's just put together head to toe. RG3 is very smart. I don't remember what RG3 scored on the Wonderlic, so, you know, but I know he's very, very intelligent. But I know Kaepernick scored a 37. And the thing about Kaepernick is people look at all the tattoos he has on him, which are visible.
Yes.
And people, I think, make a prejudicial thought process like, oh, look at the tattoos. Dude scored a 37 of the Wonderlic, highly intelligent. So you can see how he plays. So he's... You do need to have a premium on accuracy throwing the football in the league. That's what makes Aaron Rodgers, Peyton Manning, Eli Manning, Drew Brees, Tom Brady exceptional quarterbacks in this league. Their accuracy leading receivers into yards after the catch and their feel for the pocket. Kaepernick has that kind of accuracy. At the same time, he has that speed to get to the corner. Now, they say he's coached hard. Well, they're all coached hard, okay? I mean, I think that's giving Jim Harbaugh maybe a little too much credit for what's going on. I mean, Harbaugh does a great job, but you're not telling me other guys don't coach it hard. They do coach it hard. And so that part I'll kind of leave by the wayside for the moment. I mean, same guy that coached him hard didn't have him run a bootleg on third down and cost his team the Super Bowl.
By the way, RG3.
Seriously. I mean, they got down there. You have this exceptional talent. Okay, and you didn't dial up a play that gave you a great shot at doing it because of the exceptional talent that he has. And then that's the play call you call on fourth down to Crabtree. That's your play call. Really?
Ouch.
Really? Really?
RG3 scored 24.
For the 24 is a good score.
That's average for quarterbacks, according to what I've seen. Now, let me ask you this. What about, I'm sorry, Bob.
No, Steve, for those of us that don't know the Wunderlich from the Heimlich,
yeah.
Could you explain to us and probably everybody else out there, we know the Heimlich, but what's the Wunderlich?
The fact and reasoning test. You have to do it in a certain amount of time.
Is that the one that's given at the NFL Combine?
Yeah, it's at the Combine. So it's a fact and also reasoning test.
Now go ahead. Sorry.
Right. So you go through it. You have to do it in a certain time frame. You have 50 questions, and it's your ability to decipher, figure out, reason, and come up with the answer.
I scored a 17 on a fun one that I took online.
Now, I took one.
I now know one. Why I didn't make it to the NFL.
Yeah.
It's a damn Wunderlich.
No, I took it. So you scored 17.
Yeah, I'm sure you're probably significantly higher.
He's
not. Do you want to know the number? Or
you know,
not?
You might as well. You've got a. I know you got a photographic memory anyway.
Yes,
so.
You absolutely do, and you're a good logical thinker.
It's 47.
I quit.
Oh,
you've
man!
You gotta be kidding me.
And why
you cheated?
Why aren't you in the NFL?
Or then?
My gosh!
Why would I cheat on a Wunderlich test?
Exactly.
What the heck did I care?
How
what number
can you?
I got?
You knew sooner or later there would be an opportunity.
No.
What the heck number? What does it matter what I scored in the stupid thing? I mean, but that's what I scored.
All right. Now that I'm completely depressed,
I'm not. I'm proud to be associated with somebody that got a 47.
Just one more person in the world smarter than me.
I mean, no, I'm still the poorest guy in the room at the Duquesne Club. I can't be that smart.
That's a good point.
Hey, I'm looking around a bunch of people who are intelligent enough to make some paper.
Well, you know, we're talking about quarterbacks here, and you're talking about RG3. What about Russell Wilson?
Russell Wilson is somebody that Jack and I both really, really liked, and we thought that the Dolphins should have taken him in the top 10.
I really think he could be, along the lines of Kaepernick.
Exceptional. He is exceptional, intelligent, accurate, great feet, good head on his shoulders. I remember in the preseason last year when it became apparent that he had beaten out Matt Flynn, Jack called me up, and the first thing he said was, Russell Wilson, we aren't surprised, are we?
And they got him for a song. What was it, 4 years, $3 million?
Yeah, well, I mean, he was the third-round pick.
Still.
Third round pick. I mean, that's the reason why.
Yeah.
And the bottom line is, in the homogenized NFL, what Russell Wilson's problem was in the draft. If you've ever stood next to him, you'd know.
A little on the short side.
He's 5'11". He's the same. I mean, when I stood next to him, that's what got me. He's the same height I am.
He's the same height, but he didn't score the 47 on the Wunderlich. I think you should be in the NFL, Steve.
Let's see.
No, because I would get the snap, I'd be dead.
Yeah.
You have to remember that 47 also happens to be how long it took me to run the 40.
Yeah.
All right, we'll come back with more here on News Radio 1070 WKOK. Tramps. Disco Inferno, Buhner.
Those were the days.
Buhner,
yes.
White suit.
Yes, absolutely. Doing my John Travolta impressions.
Burn, baby, burn.
You've got an hour and 4 minutes, Steve, until the start of the Penn State football show out in State College.
I'm working myself into an emotional lather as we speak.
He'll get there and let's see. It starts at 6:05.
You've got.
I'm guessing 6:04:30.
No. Jack Ham will be there warming up the crowd.
That was the thing that got them last year. It was like there are a couple times I did walk in at 6:04:30.
Not a big surprise to me.
Where you go? Well, no, there was a show last year where I went to pick up something, just a Christmas item. And I got off the exit at Woody Crest just to go to Target here in State College. And boom, I pull up behind the guy in front of me. I usually leave a pretty good distance between myself and the guy in front of me, right? Also, I look in my rearview mirror, and these two vehicles are like going at a high rate of speed. Like, this isn't good, and I got whacked.
Ooh.
Right? This is right before the show. This was right before the show, so I'm talking it's like 5:15. I was just going to pick this item and be to Damon's like at 5:45, right? It's 5:15. Well, the police officer was tremendous. I just bought this car. I'm like, you've got to be kidding me. First new car of my life. I mean, I've never had a new car. And it turned out that it was a chain reaction. The girl had stopped in back of me, and the girl behind her hit her, and she hit me. I did not hit the car in front of me because I said I put a distance. So the police officer comes up and he goes, driver's license, registration. I said, sure. And he looks at it. He goes, hey, you're on the air at 6:00. I said, yeah, I know. He says, well, look, he says, you're the victim in this whole thing. What happened? I said, I'm sitting here. They come up fast. She stops. I heard bang, bang, and I got hit. He goes, fine. He says, better get to the show. He said, I'll take your statement first. We'll deal with them next. I said, okay, great.
Oh, please tell me he followed that up with, and can you ask this question for me?
No, he did not. But I did walk in like at 6:02 or whatever. And they're like, hey, you're a little early. I'm like, yeah.
And he said, could you get Jack Ham's autograph for me?
Yeah.
Of course, I'll bring Jack to the station.
I've had people ask me if I could do that for them, especially if it's for a charity.
Sure.
I've been asked to do that, which is fine.
Well, I guess
no problem with that.
The big takeaway for the show tonight is the suspense of the quarterback situation will remain a suspense for a little while longer. That there will be no announcement.
I think, Bob, it's just a personal opinion. I have no information on this at all. I think it's going to remain in suspense until the opening snap of the game a week from Saturday.
So is it number 14 versus number 5?
It's simple, yeah.
So that's what we're looking at, who comes out on that first series.
Right. And
I'm happy with that. I'm sorry?
I think that's how it's going to play out. That I think that he'll be asked repeatedly about it. I think he wants to keep it close to the vest as to what he wants to do with it. Sure. And I think that I would not be surprised if he waited until game time to do it. It's his prerogative as to when he wants to do it. And if he thinks it's advantageous for his football team to have whomever announce to the world his presence on the first snap of the game, so be it. I have no problem with that. I mean, I think I can figure it out pretty quickly.
Yeah. Well, have a great show tonight. We'll be listening at 6.
Thanks, guys.